Hello and welcome to an all-new season of This Week in Oklahoma Politics. I'm your host, KOSU's Michael Cross, along with ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel and Republican political consultant Neva Hill. Did you have a great summer?
Fantastic. Wonderful. Summer, yeah.
Hey, well, it's great to have you back. And we're talking runoff elections there this Tuesday. Probably the biggest question of 2014 is who will the Democrats send to take on Joy Hoffmeister in the race for superintendent? Rita Deskin or John Cox? Ryan, what are your thoughts on this race?
You know, I think that there was a sense that when Barisi was beaten in the primary and beaten so handily, that the race for a lot of education reformers was over, Republican or Democrat, because we even saw some Democrats switching over to Republican to vote in that primary. I don't know that that's the case anymore. I think that there are going to be some Democrats and independents looking for a solid candidate to go up against Hoffmeister now that she's aligned herself with Fallon, who is very much aligned with a lot of the Barisi policies that were up for referendum in that primary back in June. So I think it's a toss-up. It's difficult to say whether Dr. Frieda Deskin or John Cox come out on top on this. Both are talking about moving away from one-size-fits-all high-stakes testing. They have their own bases. John Cox, as a superintendent, has a strong support among superintendents themselves, and I think that led in large part to a strong showing in the primary. Frieda Deskin touting her history being involved in school reforms. There's some parity in fundraising. I think if it comes down to anything, it's going to be the down-ballot races that are driving voters to the polls. Frieda Deskin's strength has been in urban metropolitan areas. The 5th District primary that's coming up, a runoff with Al McCaffrey and Tom Guild, that may drive out enough Deskin voters to help her overcome the challenge by
Neva,
John Cox.
They're taking on Joy Hoffmeister. I think a lot of people, I'm sure, have got to be kind of disappointed Janet Barisi's not going to be there in November.
Well, I mean, I think in the Democrat runoff, I think really it gets down to kind of the question of who's going to do a good job of turnout. And you're right, Ryan. They basically are at parity in the last fundraising reports that were out. I mean, both of them raised somewhere around $74,000, $76,000. So they're out mounting a full campaign. Clearly, I think there have been a few issues. I mean, Cox got 41% in the primary. I think Deskin was somewhere around 38%. So, you know, neither had anything but just a solid foothold, and now they've got to try to drag that back out in a very, very low turnout race. And it will be a question: will there be enough rural votes come out to offset what should logically be a little better turnout in the metropolitan, particularly the 5th District area, because of the congressional race as well as the Senate race, with a candidate coming out of that area as well? So I think it's going to be fascinating. I think the other thing is there's been kind of this exchange, it appears, here of late with the whole issue of charter schools, with Dr. Cox trying to take issue with whether or not this was an attempt by Dr. Deskin to push the whole idea of charter schools into the rural area, and of course her pushing back on that, trying to say no, this is about inner city schools and trying to make that contrast. So it's not getting any play in the big picture in terms of just the broad voter pool. So it really is who can draw out their voters, and will some of these issues be enough to galvanize them to the polls next Tuesday?
Now, talking right about Congressional District 5, it's the Republicans and Democrats both have a runoff. Neva, let's start with you on the GOP. Former State Senator Steve Russell and Corporation Commissioner Patrice Douglas came out in the primary with a virtual tie, and has gotten kind of dirty over the past few days.
Well, and that's right. I mean, you have, when you think about runoffs, I mean, we always say that 70% of the time the person that comes out on top in the primary tends to win the runoff, but that women tend to do better coming from behind in runoffs. So you've got kind of this interesting mix, and it has been one that the runoffs with the two-month lag in between the primary and the runoff, it has really kind of changed the dynamic, I think, of runoffs. I mean, before, when it was you had a month in between, you never stopped. I mean, the next day everyone was back full force on the campaign trail. This time everyone's taken a little bit of a of an elongated look at the campaign, and they've tried to shore up resources, trying to wait till the end. The danger with that is your voters have gone to sleep. They've forgotten there's another election. Mm-hmm. They're assuming someone else will go to the polls, and their person's probably going to win anyway. So there's a real struggle to try to really energize their own base. And both of them have a base, but it's a small base when you think about it. I mean, combined, they got less than half of the total votes in the Republican primary, which was not a huge turnout to start with. So I think it will be whether or not this kind of late exchange with Douglas really trying to build a contrast with Russell, saying that there are some legitimate differences and pointing to his missed votes and his record in the state Senate, and Russell trying to come back and say that this is not true, and trying to get some folks, including some statewide officials that have kind of really rallied to his side. State Auditor Inspector Gary Jones, Labor Commissioner Mark Costello out front and center, for Steve Russell, trying to really ramp up and energize some votes maybe that they can bring to the table. So I think it's going to be fascinating. I still think it'll be a low turnout, and that means that the Russell camp saying that they've got a double-digit lead in their polling may or may not mean anything if they can actually get those folks to the polls.
Ryan.
Right. And, Professor Keith Gadigan at the University of Oklahoma has talked about how undecided voters aren't showing up in these runoffs, and I think that that's typically true, probably more so now with this two-month lag. And these are low-information campaigns. We're not talking about persuading a lot of voters. We're trying to energize your base and get them out to vote. With Patrice Douglas, I think that she has a larger natural constituency, having been the former mayor of Edmond. But Steve Russell, former senator, has a more compelling personal narrative, and that's where I think that you see Douglas trying to come in and undermine that somewhat with these negative ads towards the last minute. There's been some independent expenditures in these races, but they've been incredibly low. You're not going to see a lot of money dumped into these, because I think that there's a sense that the conventional wisdom is that the winner of this becomes the next congressperson from the 5th district. So why alienate somebody when you know that you're probably going to get someone that has the identical issue as their opponent at the end of the day? And I don't think Steve Russell and Patrice Douglas would go to Congress and vote differently on any piece of legislation before them.
I certainly don't think on the majority. I think you have to say that Republicans tend to know where their candidates are going to be on the issues. I do think it is it's always fascinating to me that when someone comes out and starts to paint a contrast or show a comparison between themselves and other candidates, that it immediately is a negative campaign.
Right.
And I guess being in the business, I always take an exception to that, because I think voters want information. We say they're low information voters because we don't give them the information. So
right.
We have to help connect the dots, and we have to, in any race, it's really incumbent upon those campaigns to make sure that they get their message out. Now, how the voter receives it is the bottom line. I mean, if you do it in a way that they reject it, you've wasted a lot of time, effort, and money. But if you make your point and they accept that point or change their point of view or develop, or just reinforces their existing point of view, then you've accomplished what you set out to do.
I think all of this, whenever you've got such a small group of voters that are going to turn out and decide these elections, begs the question of whether we should move to an automatic runoff system at all, so that we're not having these two-month lags, low-information campaigns, lots of money, and last minute.
A campaign is a campaign is a campaign, and I think at the real bottom line to all of it is you have to get out and you have to connect to the voters. And it's hard work. And when you have low turnout, some say it's even harder. I'm not sure that's true. If you had everyone coming out, you have to make sure you have to spend that much more money that everyone gets your message. Where in a primary or a runoff, where who are the likely voters, you can spend a much more targeted approach to not make sure everyone gets something in their mailbox, or you're spending more and more money on the airwaves, but you're making sure that that you're being very strategic in your approach.
Now, let's turn to the Democrats. UCO Professor Tom Guild had a sizable lead over State Senator Al McCaffrey coming out of the primary. Ryan, can he keep that kind of momentum?
Yeah, I think that if you talk to Senator McCaffrey, when they looked at the results coming out of that, everyone was really surprised at how far behind he was, because I think he was very much the institutional candidate, had a strong track record of raising money, had been successful on the ballot box in state legislative campaigns in the House and in the Senate. His camp will tell you that That deficit in the primary was a result of starting the campaign late. They got into the campaign, they had the legislative session to deal with, and that they have remedied that going into the runoff. They're having a strong GOTV effort. I think that there's probably an advantage to McCaffrey.
That's get out the vote, by the
way. Yeah, get out the vote. I think that there's an advantage to McCaffrey in that there's a competitive race in his old House district. So there's going to be some, if it's a close race, there will be an increased turnout in an area of Oklahoma City that has a history of voting for Al McCaffrey.
Neva, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think the fact that Gill did lead by 11%, even being outspent, I think, and the fact that he's been on the ballot before, he's been in this race before, the voters, given his aggressive door-knocking and grassroots campaign, certainly should lend toward him having some developed, identified group of voters. Mm-hmm. And in a low turnout election, that's something that has to be taken into account. I think it's a, I think it's really a toss-up in this race because, again, neither one has really kind of caught fire and really exceeded what anyone had as far as just base expectations in the race. And so I think it could go in either direction.
I think as far as financing goes, you know, they have – relatively the same amount of money in their bank account. Tom Gild has invested a lot of his own money into the campaign, but at the end of the day, dollars are dollars and they spend the same. So they have, you know, some parity in their campaign accounts. I would call it a toss-up. I would say that just because of the underlying races that are going to drive voters out to the polls, it might give McCaffrey an advantage in trying to close that 11-point gap that he had in the primary, but it's going to be close.
Finally, in the most recent reporting of finances in the race for governor, Representative Joe Dorman raised more money than Governor Fallon, about $27,000 more. Neva, Fallon still has nearly $1 million more than Dorman. Is she still safe?
Well, absolutely. I think so. When you look at it, I mean, you have to say, I mean, this is his kind of moment to say, hey, I bested the governor in this particular fundraising cycle. But, the governor entered into the reporting period with more money in the bank. She outspent Dorman by 3-1 during that last 7-week period. She has over $1 million still on hand. So, I think she's raised, I think, what over $3 million, if I recall, overall in this reelection campaign cycle already. So even though he had a good campaign fundraising effort, he touted the fact that he had 2,200 individuals across the state supporting him. That just shows that, frankly, there is a credible Democrat that's out there that's going to run hard, but you're running against a very popular governor who's going to have all of the resources behind her necessary. And I think in a year where, as we're seeing nationally, the trend is really starting to really gravitate strongly toward Republicans not only doing very well in governor's races, but doing very well in the U.S. Senate and congressional races across the board.
Ryan, what are your thoughts? He seems to be closing the gap in the polls.
Well, you know, and I think what a difference a summer can make. And that's, you know, Aneva's right. We have seen the strong trend towards GOP momentum in other states. But to see a very, an otherwise popular governor, somebody that whenever Joe Dorman first filed against her, everyone was like, well, you know, Joe's going to be a good candidate. He'll build a good contrast. But does he have a chance? Of course not. I think that that's a very different calculus today. He's within 5 points in some recent polls, striking distance, and the momentum. Even though Governor Fallon does have a fundraising advantage, the momentum that that Joe Dorman has at this point in the race, if he can carry that forward, I think that it makes him not just a strong contrast on the issues, but a formidable opponent for the governor to have to deal with going into November.
Well, let's remember, I mean, that Joe Dorman didn't have a primary. The governor easily, you know, went through her primary cycle. We also have a situation where historically, classically, you say the fall campaign is really where it kicks off after Labor Day. So we haven't really seen the governor's race really engage in terms of these two particular candidates. And I think what you also have to factor into this is the fact that even looking at Dorman's fundraising this past quarter, a third of that came from labor organizations. So, I mean, he still has a fairly limited, base of likely contributors to the campaign. So fundraising should get harder, not easier, as he goes into the final stretch, because, frankly, as many of these groups look at handicapping the races and look at who's likely to win or who likely gets reelected, that makes it very difficult for a challenger, no matter who it is on the ballot.
But Dorman's not going to have to match dollar for dollar. If he has enough money to do the media that it takes to bring Oklahoma's attention to the flip-flops in the Fallon administration, including a recent $3 million grant application under Obamacare, where they've recently turned down $54 million in grant applications, $8 billion in Medicaid expansion, but now going for $3 million. And I think that that's something that Dorman's going to be able to make hay out of. But also being able to tie her with the Barisi record on education. If Dorman has enough funds, not dollar for dollar, but enough funds and the opportunities and debates to draw those contrasts, I'd say the Governor Fallon doesn't have a cakewalk in November.
Whether it's a cakewalk, I think what you have to look at is in November, what people are going to look at is Barack Obama is still the president in the White House, and a Democrat is still going to have to battle that that very high negative, particularly in the state of Oklahoma, a very red state.
And we'll be watching it throughout the fall. It's great to have you both back. And Ryan and Eva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.